Blog Talk Radio.
Psychiatrist in private practice since 2003. Dr. Carroll previously was the director of inpatient services at the Bay Pines VA Hospital and the Bay Pines VA Medical Center. Dr. Carroll specializes in the treatment of children ages 6 and older and the treatment of adults. She's also an all-time triathlete, so if you're having any problems breaking through to the next level in athletics, she's been there, she's done it, she can tell you how to do it. If you're having a problem with life, she can certainly help you out. She's one of the best. She can call her at area code 813-689-2466 or visit her at her office at 336 East Bloomingdale Avenue in Brandon, Florida. Well, guys, we're going to start off. Last week we started off with a happy birthday announcement for Frankie, and this week we're starting off with a very happy birthday to Dr. Kathleen Carroll.
Oh, wow.
Who's, 21 and growing.
There we go.
Yesterday was her birthday, and on the 18th is her son Brady, and that's a big time in our family. So,
congratulations, happy birthday!
Yeah,
congratulations and happy birthday!
Yeah. And we want to say thank you, especially to the three ladies that give us the time every week to put the program on. Our wives, we really appreciate them for Valentine's Day.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We wish them a very, very happy Valentine's Day. So, well, guys, it's going to be a good night tonight. We got Keith Thurman is on with us.
Oh, wow.
And he'll be coming on at 6:30. And I got to get Chris on at 6:15 so I can – I know we don't have to worry about warming him up, that's for sure, even though it's cold up there. But I did see – I know, see, you said you were training all week. I did notice that there is a $100,000 purse that Roy Jones Jr. is offering to fight him on March 20th. Do you think he'll be handling that?
Well, based on his last performance, maybe. I'm not in any condition to mess with Roy, though.
He literally is offering a lucky fan. $100,000 if he can drop him. So, obviously, if Roy puts any effort in, a fan has no chance. So I wonder if it's for charity. I haven't read that much more on it, but I did read about the offer. So,
yeah, he's asking to send a 90-second video explaining why you're worthy of his being an opponent for him. But, yeah, the other thing I noticed in the late hours of last night was Ramon Chocolito Gonzalez has been added to the Golovkin-Wade undercard.
Yes.
That should prove to be a decent bout.
Yeah, this will be the third time he's co-featured a card on HBO with Golovkin, and he will be fighting McWilliams Arroyo, who is a titleist, bantamweight champion, Miguel Arroyo's brother. So McWilliams Arroyo is 16-2 with 14 knockouts. He brings a lot of power to the table. But, obviously Roman Gonzalez is rated the number one pound-for-pound fighter, not by accident. So it'll be interesting to see how he deals with McWilliams' power. But power is not something Roman Chocolito Gonzalez hasn't seen. Plus, he has plenty of power of his own as well. So,
and he has a solid chin and very good defense.
Well, we know how that happens with what happened to Amir Mansour. Everything worked out till his chin got in the way.
Wow.
Yeah. And the mayor has good defense. I mean, he has good head movement. He rolls his shoulders real good, and he will change levels on you. He'll do all of that until it's time for contact. When it's time for contact, everything seems to fall apart, and he's just in kill mode. He'll wing back. He'll throw everything into one shot that generally the opponent can see coming. And if you're talented enough, then you generally can get away from him. If you're extremely talented enough, then you can counter punch it. In the case of Brazil, he was tough enough to get up and weather some things. And, I mean, you have to hit hard to do that to Amir. To even gain Amir's respect, you have to hit sharp or hard. So, I mean, to a certain extent, you have to commend Brazil.
You know, another one thing that came in late last night was Tarver has been suspended. Antonio Tarver has been suspended by the New Jersey Athletic Commission. And this all goes back to his failed drug test after his fight with Stevie Cunningham. And as a matter of fact, they fined him $50,000. I don't know if you guys have seen that or not.
Yeah, I think they rejected his appeal. So they're going to go through with that. And he also, he is and for I think what like $700,000 in child support. So he has a hard stick with money at this very moment. But at the same time, there have been reports that he's been kind of flossing his money out there and everything. So.
Well, yeah,
that was one thing that Stevie was saying about him too.
Yeah.
You know, Stevie was saying that you know, financially they are on different levels, and that Stevie was fighting because he needed the money, but Tarver didn't necessarily need the money. But Tarver keeps getting suspended, keeps getting fined. Child support, he's going to need the money. You know what I mean?
Right.
But he's not able to fight because he's suspended yet again. And, you know, he is very articulate, very eloquent, but no matter how many times he defends himself, if you keep getting caught, it starts to look like, you know, you're just whistling in a cave. You know what I mean? Nobody's listening anymore.
Well, you know, that's funny you said that because he was in family court in Pinellas County last week, and his girlfriend, whose baby's mama, the judge did find that he does owe the $700,000 now. He's living in a $2.5 million mansion. He was driving a $150,000 Mercedes-Benz.
Yeah.
But he may have gone to court in a $150,000 Benz, but he went home on a $500,000 bus. So she hit him with everything, and just like everybody has been saying, her attorney said that there is money in offshore banks, and he has been ordered to turn everything over until he gets that money up. So that's it.
And Tarver has enterprised himself to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's turned his boxing career into his commentating career.
Mm-hmm.
He's very
mm-hmm.
articulate. He's very boxing intelligent. So he's always making money as far as it goes. I mean, he got into the scandal with Showtime, and he got a job with Spike. So he's still
that's exactly what happened. Once he got caught the first time, and once he got, once the finger was pointed at him the first time, if you choose to believe him, Showtime obviously let him go from his commentating gig. Well, the same thing's going to happen with this other network as well. So what he's doing too is obviously not only is he not allowing himself to earn a living through boxing, but he's also killing his credibility in these commentating gigs. And so he keeps losing the gigs because of this, and because he's killing his credibility, even though he is, you know, a good statesman, people aren't going to hire him.
Right.
So, I mean, there's a lot to look at with this, unfortunately.
Actions are louder than words.
That's right. That's right. Hey, guys, we got a friend of ours is going back to work, even though he said after his last fight he may think about retiring. Mr. Tony Thompson will be going back on the job against Luis the Real King Kong Ortiz.
Didn't I say last week when you mentioned Robert Helenius to me, I said, remember, Tony
mm-hmm.
Thompson's been calling him out. Tony's been
mm-hmm.
calling him out. And Helenius wasn't actually – he was supposed to fight Dimitrenko, who pulled out. Helenius signed to fight someone else. And Tony had been barking. So Tony gets the call.
And that's going to be an interesting test.
That's an HBO
fight,
too, so good for Tony. That's an HBO payday for the brother. So good for him.
Yeah, and Tony, as much as the veteran that he is, it's going to be a test for Tony, too.
You were saying, Zito?
Oh, no, I said as much as the veteran as Tony is, it's going to be a test for Tony, too. Ortiz, he presents a lot of different things that a lot of different people haven't seen, especially in the heavyweight division.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if it's going to be a test for Tony, just because at this point Tony's kind of passed a test, you know what I mean? It either is or it isn't for Tony at this point.
Mm-hmm.
There are no more tests for him. He's 44, and he's made it clear. He said, you know, yeah, I think about retirement. He said, I'm 44. He said, if I was 24, even 34, it'd be different. He said, but right now, you know, it's essentially a fight, fight by fight basis. So, so for Tony, this is just another opportunity for him. For Luis Ortiz, I think it's going to be a test because he hasn't faced. You know, certain levels of the heavyweight division. He beat Brian Jennings, who's a very capable, very quality contender, But just from a physicality standpoint, Brian Jennings does not present Luis Ortiz with some of the packages that he will see. Tony does present a package that Luis Ortiz has never seen before. And for Luis Ortiz to ascend to where, you know, a lot of people now think he can ascend to, he must first be able to, you know, conquer these guys that are a little bit bigger, a little bit longer, guys who are going to not necessarily come to him, but, you know, or come to him, but maybe even limit his countering opportunities with their size and range. So Tony's going to present some things that Luis has not seen as a pro.
True enough, but every time a fighter steps in the ring, I think they're tested. To be honest, I think tested may be a better word, but I think Luis Ortiz, he more or less, he has a very, very long amateur pedigree.
Yeah.
He's kind of veteranish himself to a certain extent, and I never really underestimate that when it comes to. I don't want to just limit it to Cuban fighters, but the Eastern European fighters, especially too. That amateur pedigree, it translates very good into the pros.
It really does.
One thing I think that Ortiz will test with Tony is Tony's timing, what Tony can actually do, when he can let his fist go to a certain extent. You can use long a lot. But I don't necessarily think Tony's feet are faster than Ortiz. Now, he could, you know, the step back, he could do the step back thing for a while until a guy maybe long steps in with good timing. I mean, so is there certain aspects that Tony has to look out for and that I think he will be tested in the fight? Not to say that Tony can't exploit what he can exploit, because Tony has been through a lot of things. He's been through more adversity than Ortiz.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I definitely agree that Tony will be tested in the fight. I think, kind of like you, anytime a fighter steps in the ring, they'll be tested. The reason why I don't think it's a test for Tony is because we already know what we got with Tony. You know, Tony has fought Klitschko twice, and he's made a good account of himself. He, you know, came up a little short. And Tony's, you know, he's like 3 for his last 6, you know, because he's getting a little older. So, Tony's a known commodity. So that's why I don't see it as a test for Tony, because we already know what we got in Tony. The reason why I see it as a test for Luis Ortiz is because he's still an unknown commodity on a professional level. Agreed. I think, you know, these guys that are coming over from Cuba and from Eastern Europe with the amateur pedigree, they're being able to kind of be thrown into the fire early into their careers. But still, there's still a lot for them to learn. Just like Orlando Salido was a test for Vasily Lomachenko. It's a test because they're stepping up to a level they've never been on in the pros. And you know, Tony's been at this level. And that's one thing Tony will probably be the first one to let you know. I've been here. He's stepping up to my level. So it will be interesting, again, more than anything, from just a fundamental technical standpoint, Tony's not necessarily going to present Luis Ortiz with anything he hasn't seen, like you said. He's got a long amateur pedigree, and he's been boxing longer than Tony, even though Tony's, you know, about 8 years his senior. You know, this is a guy who's very fluid, been boxing since he was a kid. Tony came to the sport late. However, as a pro, they don't go 4, they go 10 to 12. As a pro, you get away with leaning on your opponent a little bit more, you know, banging to the body counts a little bit more. So it's a different game. And so these are things that Luis hasn't seen in the pro ranks yet, and definitely hasn't seen for the duration of 10 to 12 rounds. If Tony can take him that far. So it's going to be a very interesting fight. I think, you know, Tony said he took the fight kind of on short notice. He said he's working his butt off to get in the best shape he can be in.
Hey, guys, we're joined by Dr. Chris. Chris, you want to join in with that? We're talking about Tony Thompson.
I got to give you my opinion on Ortiz. I think he's formidable. He's the next champion in my book. He's got everything, does everything well, knows how to pace himself, got a lot of self-confidence. I just think a hell of a lot of him. And he's, to me, one of the most impressive guys out there. I think he can give anybody a tough night. Even now, even like you say, as amateurs, he's been so long in the ring that, you know, so many damn fights. He's got his calmness down. He doesn't get excited, paces himself beautiful. He's got supreme confidence. I think he's going to be fighting for the title very shortly. You know, that's what I think. I remember the Tony fighting, you know, Ortiz isn't fighting a pushover. He's fighting a guy that's been there, you know. He's not on his way up anymore. He's bottoming out. You know, he's kind of bottomed out, and he's taking paydays now. So, you know, unfortunately for Tony, he's been around a long while. But, you know, I just think Ortiz is formidable. I saw things in him. He's hard to hit, too, the damn guy. He's hard to
– yeah.
He's pretty elusive. I mean, he's got
good upper body
pretty
movement.
Good he moves that big upper body, which looks like a damn tank, you know. Looks like a tank on a pair of legs. And I think he's just impressive. He's good defensively. He's good offensively. It looks like he's got a chin. And you know, he's got supreme confidence. And you can tell of everything he does. It just, you know, reeks with confidence. So I think he's got everything. I think he's the next man. You know, he's up. He'd be right up there fighting the big Bramba from Ireland. You know what I mean? Big Mamu. What the hell happened to Big Mamu? Where did he go? I haven't seen him in any publicity things.
Yeah, Fury. He has the rematch clause against Klitschko.
Because is he going to fight him, or what are they going to do? You know what I mean? Have you heard? I haven't heard anything. Read anything about it or what?
They're still dancing with that one, Chris.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. They're still dancing with it, yeah. But
he's supposed
to happen.
He's probably working on his song, his singing, you know? He's going to sing a little better than he did last time. You know? Maybe he's working on that, working on a few songs. But the guy's funny anyway. What the hell? I tell you what, I think Ortiz would give him one hell of a fight right now. One hell of a fight. I mean, Klitschko, I didn't realize Klitschko was as one-dimensional, you know, as he is. Plus, Klitschko's not loaded with a lot of heart. And I know he's heavyweight champion for a while.
He's not loaded with a lot of heart.
His heart's about the size of a bantamweight, you know, 113-pounder. And he just drives me crazy when he clinches and holds and takes physical advantage over everybody. And I think he's ran out of – I think now that there's a group of contenders out there to kick his butt, you know. And I think we've seen the last of him. I was very impressed with his brother, but not so much him.
Yeah. Well, he's older now, too.
Yeah, he's older than the brother was. But the brother was always tougher. You know, and he threw the right hand. He didn't hold it like he was going to jail if he threw a right hand. You know what I mean?
he let it go all night long.
He threw that right hand. Let me
throw something else out to you. There's been a lot of press about Anthony Joshua and Charles Martin, and now all of a sudden. Eddie Hearn's trying to put a fight together with those two. Z, being our technical analyst, can you break that down for us?
Charles Martin is more fluid.
Mm-hmm.
Anthony Joshua, I'll tell you what. If Anthony Joshua brings the fight forward,
With a high guard,
Charles Martin can have problems. If Anthony Joshua is slow, if his feet are in the sand, and he's gonna get outboxed into maybe a knockout. He's gonna have to move forward because he's not gonna be able to really move laterally or backward against Martin. Martin has better footwork. Period. He's a better range boxer. Period. Joshua will get killed out there. Joshua, he has long arms. He can time Martin at times. Martin has his head straight up often when he jabs or often when he has to do anything defensively. He's usually pulling straight back with his head straight up.
And Joshua's a bigger guy, too. He's a taller, bigger guy.
Yeah, so he could go ahead with his long arms and step in with timing. Joshua was a bit slow, so he's going to have to really have good timing with Martin. Martin, he seems to he has better reflexes, especially with defense. The only thing is, if Joshua, he's a bigger guy, and if he can apply that pressure to Martin, Martin tends to move straight back. He's not a circular guy necessarily. So he can get trapped in the corner and maybe beat him up for durations of time.
You know, the fact of the matter is, too, is that they're both young guys, and neither one of them are the finished product. I completely disagree with Zito on his assessment of Joshua being slow. I think Joshua is quicker than Martin. I think Martin is more fluid. But I think Joshua, from point A to point B, he's physically dynamic. I think he has, he can be quick with his shots. He's just more deliberate because he's more robotic in his style. Once he lets his hand go, one good thing about both of those guys is they both are not afraid to throw combinations. They both will throw to the head and body, something that our long-running champion Vladimir Klitschko was not going to do. It's a shame, honestly, that Charles Martin has a belt now. Because it puts a target on his back, and he really still needs more time to develop. Same thing with Anthony Joshua. And if it weren't for Charles Martin having that belt, Eddie Hearn wouldn't be staring Joshua towards a title shot right now, because he knows Joshua needs more time to develop. But he figures, you know what, we could put more money in the bank if we put a belt on Joshua, and this is the guy he's most likely to beat. You can't put Joshua in there with Fury or Wilder right now. He's just not a finished product. But if you could put him in there with another guy who's not a finished product, Anthony Joshua is the bigger, better athlete. And so there's a path that he can win. I agree with Zito that I believe Charles Martin is a more fluid boxer at this point. But they're both not finished. So it's kind of a shame, in this day and age that we have these fractured titles, because then you get guys like this who get a title who really are not necessarily ready to defend it against the best guys in the division. And what's a shame, too, is all of a sudden Charles Martin, who's a guy who maybe if you give, another 2 or 3 years could really develop into something special, fast, he's going to be thrown to the wolves for money now because he has a belt. So, I think it's kind of a shame, actually, because once they fight each other, whoever wins, who do they defend the title against next? You know what I mean? Anybody else you put him in with legitimately, could ruin that kid. So, I don't know. But right now, I would lean towards Joshua. I just think he's a bigger, more explosive, and a little closer to the finished product all around, even though I think Charles Martin, from the outside, is a better fighter right now.
You know what? In fighting terms, Joshua's a better fighter. Martin, to me, is a better boxer.
See, I disagree, because I think Joshua is much better inside. Martin hasn't shown he's a good boxer inside.
Joshua's more
inside
diverse.
Is not just fighting too. Inside is boxing too, and I think Joshua's better inside. I think Martin's better outside, better with outside footwork. I think Joshua's a little bit better when his footwork is tighter inside. Joshua from the outside looks very robotic to me, and to me that's where his problem comes in at this point.
Martin to me is better defensively aware, and to be honest, that's half of boxing. It's defensive awareness. Joshua, he's offensive-minded. He's dynamic, offensive-minded. He's powerfully dynamic.
He fights more explosively, whereas Martin, what I like about Martin tends to take his time, set his shots up. Joshua fights more explosively. He fights more with an edge. I just think, again, it's a shame,
they'll do that in Britain. The way they had Dylan White fight Joshua, these are two prospects, two guys with upside.
They did the same thing with James DeGale and George Groves. These were two guys with upsides. They will have them fight each other. So, I don't know, it'd be a fight I like to see because, again, they're not finished product. They both have vulnerabilities at this point in their game that either one could take advantage of. So it'd be an interesting fight.
Hey guys,
neither guy has the.
I'm sorry, Z, We're joined by welterweight champion and 26-0, Mr. Keith Thurman. Keith, how are you tonight?
We're doing good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great.
So one time, how you doing, sir?
Hey, how's it going, Keith?
Keith, you got a great fight coming up here with Sean Porter in a couple weeks. I know when we talked Thursday, you had mentioned that you have another friend of ours, Mr. Edner Cherry, in the gym with you, sparring with you. How's it going with that?
It's going great. You know, Edner has he always has, and he still does, even though he's been developing ever since he's been a part of St. Pete Boxing. You know, he has a real terrific, aggressive, move-forward boxing style. So he's probably the number one partner that resembles Sean Porter's aggressiveness the most in camp.
I totally agree.
Darn right. How we start?
Keith.
You want to start? Chris,
Keith,
you want to start
about
there?
About a year ago, we talked about Sean Porter. I thought he would give you a hard time, and you didn't think he would. And then he had a bad fight shortly thereafter, and I don't think he's reached his peak again. What do you think now? You think he's the same guy he was, or you think there's any improvement in his style? You think he's going to give you a hard time? What do you think?
I don't really see a tremendous improvement in his style. If anything, there might be an improvement in his worth ethic. Obviously, losing the IBF, being as young as he is, and with his father by his side, they are extremely eager to have another world title wrapped around their waist. So, for me, you know, I respect the Team Porter very well. I know they have respect for me also. And I prepare to see Sean Porter's best. The only thing that I'm very confident about is no matter how aggressive he wants to be, he kind of telegraphs a little bit from working with him before. That herky-jerky movement that he uses is designed to be unpredictable, but it's kind of not. You can see where the force of the attack is coming from, and you can prepare for it. I really believe that, you know, one thing that he's going to bring into the ring on March 12th is a spirit of relentlessness. You know, he fought with that spirit, you know, against Adrian Broner, and he fought with that spirit against Kell Brook. Kell Brook just had a good defense, and he was able to land accurate punches and win the fight. You know, my plan is to be similar, use my defense, land the more accurate punches. But instead of hold, you know, I plan on making Sean Porter miss and moving around the ring and putting on a great boxing performance.
Keith,
I thought
this
about
is
the styles. You know, he's not a shorter guy, always telegraphs almost everything he does. It's very hard for him not to, because he's got to come to you. He's got to be the aggressive guy. You could sit back and wait and see where a punch is coming from. You can counter much, you know, very quickly. I think I like the position you're in and your style against him now. I really do. Changed my mind. I think you're going to have I think it's going to be a good fight. But just what you said, you know, he's got to come to you. He's going to make mistakes by leading. And, you know, he's a short guy. He's not that, you know, he's at a disadvantage. You've got reach and height on him. Not a hell of a lot, but enough. So I'll be looking forward to seeing it. Like you say, there's not much he can do to change his style. He's just got to be more rugged, you know. So that's the only way he can go. So anyway, I'm glad
he's
it's going to be a good fight.
I'd
be interested to see it.
Yeah, he's going to have to be smart about his approach. You know, I predict that he's going to try to work behind his jab a lot. You know, double pumping it, triple pumping it, things of that nature. Stutter stepping and trying to feint to throw off the timing. But, you know, I'm prepared for you know, for chaotic movements. I mean, you guys seen the boxing exhibition that I put on Lennard Bundu when Bundu was undefeated, and you know, he had a awkward herky jerky style, but because he was short and because he had lack of arm reach on me in that fight, you know, I was very easily able to stay on the outside and keep him at bay. And obviously the knockdown helped him not want to rush in too much from the first round. So.
I noticed Porter, when he double jabs, he moves his head to the right side because his reach isn't much. That makes him liable to counter, being countered by a good straight right hands. And I think that's what he's going to do with you. If he does double jab, he's going to move his head to the right. And I think he can counter him with right hands. And I think it'll be an effective punch. I hope he's not listening. You know? He'll know what he's doing. But anyway,
okay,
I think you'll figure him out real quick.
Do you have a question?
Oh, yeah. To be honest, Porter, he is a straight-line fighter. Before movement, he'll move his head side to side, but he's always going to seem to come on a straight line. That's his habit. Every fighter has a habit. That's his habit. One thing is, though, when he's in there, he tends to stay in there. Keith, how do you feel about dealing with the defense, and can you deal with him inside constantly? Or is he going to be there?
Yeah, you know, he has to make it on the inside, and then it's his job to stay on the inside. Due to the straightforward approach, you know, boxing and boxers are all about the art of circle fighting.
Yeah.
And when a fighter moves into a straight line, and the other fighter moves into a circle,
yep,
one fighter can only really follow that fighter for so long before he has to readjust his feet and before distance is automatically created. Even if I was up on the ropes, you know, he would have to prevent me from circling to really get me stuck, you know. I was in the gym sparring today, and you know, when you're on the ropes and someone's coming straight at you, 9 out of 10 times, they will be unsuccessful on throwing more than 3 to 4 punches at a time if you are circling out as they are coming in.
Yeah.
So really it depends on what kind of movement he uses. If he creates a little bit of distance and doesn't bum rush in, because the technique that I'm referring to is when someone bum rushes in because they don't hesitate from pulling themselves back. If he comes in a little bit and steps out and sidesteps as I'm going over and then comes back in, then obviously he can apply a little bit more pressure. But that's just the beauty of the game, man. You know, moving to the left, moving to the right, seeing how aggressive they want to be. And if he's overly aggressive, and he keeps track of me, then I only have one option, and that's to fight back, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So we're well prepared for everything. Truly looking forward to this fight. Some people thought that I didn't really want this fight because I just kept my mouth shut during the holiday season, which all I was doing was enjoying my own personal holiday season. But
good.
You know, we asked for this fight way before Team Porter asked for this fight. We asked for this fight back when Sean Porter was the IBF champion of the world, before I obtained the WBA championship of the world. And Kenny Porter himself said in an article, oh, we'll fight Keith Thurman when he has a belt and Sean's a champ, and then we'll unify both belts. You know, obviously.
I remember that.
They knew the fight was going to happen in the future. And the fight was already presented to them. I know this happened, and that's why they had such a comment. You know, I didn't make a big deal about it. I didn't make a big fuss about it. I understood that this fight is a fight that could always occur. We're two of the best welterweights that, you know, America has to offer. So I got the belt. He doesn't have the belt. And you don't see me making such claims that that I want Sean Porter to have a belt of his own. You know, I wanted this fight. This is a great fight. Sean Porter has a great resume, and he's a top 10 welterweight, the highest ranked top 10 welterweight that I've been able to step into the ring with, and I would love to showcase my skills and talent up against Team Porter.
Hey, Keith, this is Ty. Thanks for coming back on again. It's always a pleasure talking to you. One reason why I like talking to you personally is because what I tell boxing and Muay Thai students is that boxing is a martial art. And you speak of it the way a martial artist speaks of it. And the way you talk in regards to the art, it seems like it slowed down for you. Andre Ward was talking recently about how things have started to really slow down for him in the ring. Have things slowed down for you where you can really see it and you just know the game where you can kind of analyze it on the fly? Is it at that point with you at this point in your life?
I mean, I'm definitely a student of the game, and I do feel that we are hitting that moment where everything just makes sense. You've seen it all so many times before. You know, it doesn't matter whose body is doing it, you know. It doesn't matter if it's Marcos Maidana, Sean Porter, Akel Brook, you know. The fighter doesn't matter. It's the fight game that we're dealing with, and we're always going to be dealing with the fight game, you know. So it's really understanding the game, and like you said, understanding the art. And really, I think what has happened is I turned 27, and something in my whole being and in my whole presence, even in the sport of boxing, has really changed because I've come to the conclusion you've been in this game for 20 years. Ever since I was 7 years old, and I've been a student of the game. I didn't start off, you know, whooping people's all the time left and right. You know, I got my butt kicked in the gym just like anybody else who steps in the gym for the first time. You know, even if you're some little phenomenon, you're the toughest kid on your block, all they got to do is grab a kid from another block, go to another gym. You know?
And meet everybody.
You know what I'm saying? My trainer used to always say, you know, there's more than just being the toughest fighter in Greenwood, the neighborhood that I grew up in. So, and, you know, now we're on this world-class stage. I've been here for several years now, premiering my first fight on HBO 3 years ago. And there's just a new level of confidence. And plus, I'm champion. I've held the belt for a little while. I've defended the belt a few times now. And I'm just really, really comfortable and just acknowledging who Keith One Time Thurman truly is.
Mm-hmm. Keith, this is Frank. You came into the fight game with one of the greatest guys I've ever met in my life was Ben Getty. Ben had quite a few excellent boxers. And can you tell us, you know, I know he was like a father figure to you. And could you tell us what it was like to work under Ben?
I mean, first off, it was a blessing, you know. Ben Getty had so many tremendous stories of, you know, his fighters, his old-time fighters, Ronnie Essien. And he would talk about working in the training camps with Sugar Ray Leonard and what it was like. Seeing Roy Jones at an early age. And, you know, growing up, man, I was 7 years old when I met Ben Getty, and he started teaching me to box. And every single time he would tell some of these stories, I'd be like, you know, first off, I can only imagine them in black and white. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just knew that these were some old stories. Mm-hmm. And then part of me just couldn't really believe that this man who had all this knowledge of the professional sport helped, you know, Kenny Gold to a bronze medal back in 1988. That, you know, that he's working with a young kid, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old. You know, so part of it actually seemed fictional to me. I really couldn't even believe everything that came out of his mouth, even though I knew he wasn't the kind of person to lie or, tell a tall tale, you know. He was a military man. He was very straightforward, and he never wasted his breath on any subject, you know. He always spoke his heart and said exactly how he felt. But he would constantly just, you know, say little things about the sport of boxing, how what to prepare for, and right away at an early age he always admired my power, and I think Ben, because of his background as a strength and conditioning coach, I think, you know, he really, really loved power punchers. You know, he understood that with power you can end the fight in any given round. You can come back in the fight from a single knockdown, creating a TKO or KO. And it's power, devastating knockout power, is what the fans really come to see. You know, I mean, there are people who really love boxing in general, but the typical fan really wants to see knockouts. And that's why Mike Tyson was admired forever, even to this day. You know, boxing knowledgeable people know that Mike Tyson was a devastating fighter, but he wasn't the same, you know, in the later rounds if you can handle his power early on, and that his career early up until his first title match was pretty sugar-coated with just grabbing heavyweights left and right for him to get those knockouts on and put great performance on. And it was a lot of it was a lot of managing and stuff, but I mean that's still typical, and that's typical to this day, even, you know. But obviously, you know, people love Mike Tyson more than they, in my opinion, what I've seen, people love Mike Tyson more than they like Evander Holyfield, and Evander Holyfield beat him twice.
Yeah, that's a good point. Good point.
Great, Chris. You have any more questions?
I'm listening to what he's saying. You know, there is a time in your life when you're lucky enough to meet a guy that becomes very important to you and teaches you things. You know, and it sounds like this gentleman that he ran into was a perfect fit for him during that time in his career. And but I think now Dan Birmingham's in a position, with all that's behind you, Keith, I think Dan's in a position to really take it to the next level. I think you've been lucky to have two good men in your life. And, you know, both of them got their concern for you, you know, as we all know. But when you have a trainer that loves power and he can train power fighters, it's totally different from the guys that train fighters. We had a guy in Philly named Georgie Benton who was a fantastic
Georgie
boxer.
Benton. He worked with Holyfield.
But he couldn't, of all people that he went to train was Tex Cobb. Now, how the hell do you take Willie Pep and tell him to teach Tex Cobb to fight? I mean, I always felt like, Tex, you got the wrong guy in your corner. He only knows how to box. He doesn't know a damn thing about slugging and the fact that you got an iron head, you know? I said I felt like he should have had a different guy training it, because he didn't know what to do with Tex. To this day, Tex never threw a left hook behind a right hand. He only threw one punch at a time. He tried to knock your head off with a right hand, and when he'd miss, the guy would step back, turn his shoulder away from the right hand, counter him with uppercuts. Tex never threw the left hand behind the right. Never threw the left hook. It takes a different type trainer to really train a guy that is a power puncher, because you know, it's hard to land just one shot. You wait for that one shot. Next thing you know, you lost a fight.
Exactly.
And I think Dan's an excellent combination trainer both ways. Teaches a power puncher and teach him how to win. you know, and not just depend on that right hand all the time. By the way, I think Sean Porter's one.
I think the Diego Chavez fight that you had with Keith is a perfect example of that. Like, we watched that fight, and the whole time we were saying he boxed him into a knockout. And it was just perfect, you know what I mean, because you went and you fought with your game plan, and the knockout eventually came. You didn't look for it. You just took it when it presented itself. And, you know, you were talking about Bundu. And Bundu does apply, the same kind of pressure that Sean Porter applies. I think he applies smarter pressure. I think he's better defensively getting in. He tends to protect his head better. Sean Porter's more reckless. And when he gets in, he tends to peep his head up like a turtle out the shell every now and then, and he's open for the counter. But he's known to have a good chin. Obviously, Broner floored him. But what Porter tends to do is to muck up a fight. He reminds me of a younger Tim Bradley, where he would put his chest on you, and he would just hit whatever. He's a strong guy. He doesn't get a lot of knockouts. It's not because he probably doesn't have power, but it's because he actually smothers his own offense a lot, and he smothers you. Are you prepared for some of the wrestling tactics that, you know, obviously could occur with Sean Porter?
Yes, I am, not looking forward to it. The real reason being is because when somebody really is constantly that reckless with moving forward, I mean, you guys have seen what happens when, how many times I've taken headbutts, you know.
Bendu
actually headbutted me, I believe, 5 times in a 12-round fight. So the interview of me afterwards with all those bumps and bruises on my head, there was only one good left hook that he landed that could possibly do any swelling. All the rest of the swelling was five headbutts in 12 rounds.
Wow.
So that's almost one headbutt every other round. It was
the big hematoma you had with Guerrero as well. So
yeah.
And that was, you know, that hematoma is one to go down in history, you know, nine rounds with a freaking walnut.
You had a baby Rockman. You had a Hakeem Rockman on you.
That was a learning experience as well.
Hey, Keith, good. Years ago we had a guy named Gene Fulmer. Did you ever see Gene Fulmer fight, Keith, in his early days? He averaged 5 headbutts a round.
Oh, my gosh.
Like a billy goat. He looked like a Neanderthal. He had this big head like a Neanderthal, man. And he used to run in and ram you with the damn thing. And then swat the hell out of you. He had the worst style you ever saw. But the only man that ever stopped him dead in his tracks was Joey Girardello. He kept butting Joey like that, ramming him with his head. Joey just stopped, took the top of his head, put his arms down, and butted him right on the forehead. Knocked him back about 10 feet. What do you think Gene Fulmer did? He complained to the ref that Giardello's headbutting. the whole nation laughed. Are you kidding me? The ref said, are you kidding me? You've been doing it all night.
The whole nation laughed.
He just didn't even warn Joey. But you get them damn headbutters, they're dangerous. Dangerous, Jesus. And I don't know if Porter's a headbutter, is he? I've never noticed Porter to headbutt like that.
No, he's known to be a headbutter, but it's just the simple fact of how that fight style can promote a headbutt on the inside.
Yeah, it really does.
You know, I mean, when Guerrero hit me with his head, I knew he was coming in. I didn't know he was coming in that close. You know, I'm watching the shoulder, and, you know, I see the head coming forward, so I know he's coming in, but I'm watching the shoulder and the punch that's about to happen, and then sure enough, boom, we clash heads. So, I mean,
that's exactly
it's so
what you have to worry about with
many
Porter.
Times
yeah.
where accidental headbutts occur. I've accidentally headbutted a fighter on the inside before. So, you know, for the most part, people think that I'm not an inside fighter, but like how you guys were talking earlier about smothering your own punches, I don't like to do that. I don't like to smother my punches. I like to have the proper extension on my body shots and my head shots at all times. So, you know, I like
to
be on the outside.
You have some of the best footwork in boxing. You really do. You're always, always, always on balance. Always on balance.
Keith, the one loss that Porter has was his fight with Kell Brooks. Have you looked at that fight at all?
I haven't looked at the fight many times in this camp, but I was present during the match.
Mm-hmm.
I remember Porter being in terrific shape for the fight, but definitely smothering himself.
Mm-hmm.
Throwing lots of punches, but never landing much of a very clean headshot throughout the match.
Mm-mm.
You know, you can see at the end of the fight how Kell Brook practically looked the same way in the 12th round as his face did in the first round. So,
and all Kell Brook did was time him, and then when Sean Porter would get in and smother his offense, Kell Brook was big and strong enough just to blunt him. And then they would do it again, and Kell Brook would time him coming in, time him going out. And, I mean, it was a physically – Sean Porter, and this is one thing you know, Keith, Sean is going to make you – you know, he's going to exhaust your reserves. He makes it a physically demanding fight. But because he tends to smother his offense, he doesn't land the clean shots that you would expect a guy like that to land.
And one thing that Kell Brook did that I think was real important, and he punched on the way out. Like a lot of guys, you come in and you make contact, and then you mutually part ways. Kell Brook didn't do that with Sean Porter. And Floyd Mayweather's good with that, too. He was good at that.
Make you catch it going or coming. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. And many fighters
don't do that.
That's
what
you
got to do with kind of Sean Porter, because once Sean Porter – Sean Porter actually advances past his own punching range. And that's where the danger of the headbutts come, even though he's not known as a headbutter. And part of the reason why I don't think he headbutts as much is because his chin's a little high. But he advances into that range where you have to worry about headbutts. So I completely understand, you know, Keith's concern with that aspect of this fight.
Yeah, Sean Porter's not a Tim Bradley, though, where he's more or less swinging his head. Sean Porter's not a head. His head's generally, his chin's straight up, and he's generally on one line. So that's...
The point you made about Kell Brook firing on when Porter was finally going to step back up, you know, I mean, that was probably one of the smartest things that Kell did, besides, not moving back. He was holding his ground, and when Sean Porter smothered himself too much, you know, Kell did kind of hold. But I tell people, when people complain about how much holding he did, you know, you can complain about how much smothering Sean did. I mean, it's really ineffective. Your punches are ineffective for yourself and for the fight in general. You know, you're not a smothering punches, even if it's in a series of combinations, is almost, you know, it's almost nothing. Like in the amateurs, when a coach used to tell certain kids, oh, shoe shine, you know. there's not much to it. You can kind of, you know, at the end of the day, what they're really trying to do is they're trying to entice the judges that, you know, we're outworking our opponent, thus we're winning. We're being aggressive and we're outworking them, thus we're winning. But, you know, Floyd Mayweather has proven time and time again that accuracy is what's winning.
Well, guys, we're just about up to our hour here. Keith, I want to thank you again for coming on. Every time we have you on, I learn a little bit more, and I really appreciate you giving us this time. We're looking forward to another win at March, was it March 12th? And
that's right, March 12th.
Yeah, and I'll see you up at St. Pete next week. I'll be up there probably Tuesday or Wednesday, and maybe stop in to see if that's okay.
Sounds good. That's not a problem. Thanks for having me.
Great.
Tonight.
Thanks for coming, Mark.
Hey, thanks, Keith.
Yeah, all right, Keith. I know you're going to look good, buddy. I want to see this new style you got. All right?
Yep.
Good luck to you, man.
Sounds good. Thank you for the love and support.
Thank you, sir. Great day. Well, guys, we're about here at the end of our time. Chris, I want to thank you for coming on. It's insightful as always. Z, you're our technical guy that shows us all the ins and outs of boxing. And Ty, you always have the statistician in the group and have everything right at your fingertips, and I appreciate that very much. So, Z, do you want to lead us out?
Sure do. I want to thank you guys. I want to thank Dr. Chris. I definitely want to thank Keith Thurman. These shows are definitely in memory of Bob, and if anyone wants to hear any fighting words, please do call. Ty?
Hey, it was a pleasure talking to you, Butch, Zito, Dr. Chris, and we're very gracious that Keith stopped by and joined us and gave us his cerebral input, very cerebral input. Bob is our co-pilot. Everyone enjoy your week.
Well, again,
I didn't get a chance to tell you, but I spent 4 or 5 hours yesterday with Davey Tabir. We had a million laughs.
Oh,
the next show.
Yeah, Dave, we laughed
all day. We went back to when he was 10 years old and first came in the gym. I was handling him then. So we had a million laughs. I'll tell you about
Great.
It next week. All right, guys. Take care.
Hey, Chris.
Bye.
Chris, tell him to answer his phone. I keep trying to call him to get him back on.
He's a busy man.
Yeah, I know.
He's making all kinds of money.
Good.
All right. I'll see you guys.
Thanks, Chris.
Bye.
Again, we want to wish all the ladies that give us the time each week to do this program. We wish them a very happy Valentine's Day. And guys, again, I appreciate everything you do. Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, men and women of police and fire services. When you're out there and you see someone in a uniform, you just give them a handshake and eye wink, make eye contact with them. It means a world of good to each and everybody in the uniform. These programs are also dedicated to those who've lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcap, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Patrolman David Crawford, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Arnolfo Crispin, Lakeland PD, Deputy Barbara Pell, Broward County Sheriff's Office, Chief Al Hogle, Longbow Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Brian Alonzo, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township, PA Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, MIT Officer Sean Collier, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Office, Patrolman Robert Germain, Windermere, Florida Police Department, Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, Patrolman Charlie Condit, Tarpon Springs Police Department, Patrolman Robert Wilson, Philadelphia Fire Department, Louisiana Trooper Steve Vincent, and Harris County Deputy Sheriff Darrell Goforth. And we have three names, unfortunately, we'll be adding next week. Two from Broward County, Howard County, Maryland Police Department, and one from Minneapolis. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, at some time we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the roads rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields, and the sun shine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hallow of his hands. Good night, and God bless.
Shem alek ma yelama, shem ahezah yelama, son ashen evorat fed, hakuig again ma yelama. Grief and pain are all I know.
1999. All units be advised, 1999's response is last emergency. May God rest his soul.